Chapter 29. Round my waist, a scarlet turban 3 feet high, and decorated with a tuft of the scarlet feathers of the flamingo, formed my headdress, and I did not allow myself a single ornament, except a small silver skull and crossbones in front of my turban. Two brace of pistols, a Malay kris, and a tulwar, sharp on both sides, and very nearly 6 feet in length, completed this elegant costume. My two flags were each surmounted with a red skull and crossbones, adornamented, one with a black, and the other with a red beard of enormous length, taken from men slain in battle by me. On one flag were of course the arms of John Company, on the other, an image of myself bestriding a prostrate elephant, with the simple word, Gajputi, written underneath in the Nagari, Persian, and Sanskrit characters. I rode my black horse, and looked, by the immortal gods, like Mars. To me might be applied the words which were written concerning handsome General Webb, in Marlborough's time. To noble danger he conducts the way, his great example all his troop obey, before the front the major sternly rides, with such an air as Mars to battle strides. Propitious heaven must sure a hero save like Paris handsome, and like Hector brave. ... My officers, Captains Biggs and McAnulty, Lieutenants Glogger, Popendick, Stuffle, and C, were dressed exactly in the same way, but in yellow, and the men were similarly equipped, but in black. I have seen many regiments since, and many ferocious-looking men, but the Ahmednugger irregulars were more dreadful to the view than any set of ruffians on which I ever set eyes. I would to heaven that the Tsar of Muscovy had passed through Kabul and Lahore, and that I with my old Ahmednuggers stood on a fair field to meet him. Bless you, my swart companions in victory. Through the mist of 20 years I hear the booming of your war cry, and mark the glitter of your scimitars as ye rage in the thickest of the battle. I do not wish to brag of my style of writing, or to pretend that my genius as a writer has not been equaled in former times. But if, in the works of Byron, Scott, Goethe, or Victor Hugo, the reader can find a more beautiful sentence than the above, I will be obliged to him. That is all I simply say, I will be obliged to him. Geog. G. M. H. E. 1. C. S. C. 1. H. A. But away with melancholy reminiscences. You may fancy what a figure the irregulars cut on a field day, a line of 500 black-faced, black-dressed, black-horsed, black-bearded men, Biggs, Glogger, and the other officers in yellow, galloping about the field like flashes of lightning, myself enlightening them, red, solitary, and majestic, like yon glorious orb in heaven. There are very few men, I presume, who have not heard of Holker's sudden and gallant incursion into the Duab, in the year 1804, when we thought that the victory of Lasswery and the brilliant success at Digue had completely finished him. Taking 10,000 horse, he broke up his camp at Palimbang, and the first thing General Lake heard of him was that he was at Putna, then at Rumpooch, then at Donkeridum. He was, in fact, in the very heart of our territory. The unfortunate part of the affair was this. His Excellency, despising the Maratha chieftain, had allowed him to advance about 2,000 miles in his front, and knew not in the slightest degree where to lay hold on him. Was he at Hazarabagh? Was he at Bagli Gunj? Nobody knew, and for a considerable period the movements of Lake's cavalry were quite ambiguous, uncertain, promiscuous, and undetermined. Such, briefly, was the state of affairs in October, 1804. At the beginning of that month I had been wounded, a trifling scratch, cutting off my left upper eyelid, a bit of my cheek, and my underlip, and I was obliged to leave Biggs in command of my irregulars, whilst I retired for my wounds to an English station at Farrukhabad, alias Fudiger it is, as every twopenny postman knows, at the apex of the Duab. We have there a cantonment, and thither I went for the mere sake of the surgeon and the sticking plaster. for Aqabad, then, is divided into two districts or towns. The lower Kotwal, inhabited by the natives, and the upper, which is fortified slightly, and has all along been called Fudigar, meaning in Hindustani the favorite resort of the white-faced Ferengis near the mango tope consecrated to Ram, occupied by Europeans. It is astonishing, by the way, how comprehensive that language is, and how much can be conveyed in one or two of the commonest phrases.
Bix, then, and my men were playing all sorts of wondrous pranks with Lord Lake's army, whilst I was detained an unwilling prisoner of health at Fudigar. An unwilling prisoner, however, I should not say. The cantonment at Fudigar contained that which would have made any man a happy slave. Woman, lovely woman, was there in abundance and variety. The fact is, that when the campaign commenced in 1803 the ladies of the army all congregated to this place, where they were left, as it was supposed, in safety. I might, like Homer, relate the names and qualities of all. I may at least mention some whose memory is still most dear to me. There was Mrs. Major General Bulcher, wife of Bulcher of the Infantry. Miss Bulcher. Miss Belinda Bulcher, whose name I beg the printer to place in large capitals. Mrs. Colonel Van de Goblishoy. Mrs. Major Macon and the four Mrs. Macon. The Honorable Mrs. Burgoo, Mrs. Flix, Hicks, Wicks, and many more too numerous to mention. The flower of our camp was, however, collected there, and the last words of Lord Lake to me, as I left him, were, "Gahagan, I commit those women to your charge. Guard them with your life, watch over them with your honor, defend them with the matchless power of your indomitable arm." Fudigar is, as I have said, a European station, and the pretty air of the bungalows, amid the clustering topes of mango trees, has often ere this excited the admiration of the tourist and sketcher. On the brow of a hill the Brahmaputra River rolls majestically at its base, and no spot, in a word, can be conceived more exquisitely arranged, both by art and nature, as a favorite residence of the British fair. Mrs. Bulcher, Mrs. Van de Goblishoy, and the other married ladies above mentioned, had each of them delightful bungalows and gardens in the place, and between one cottage and another my time passed as delightfully as can the hours of any man who is away from his darling occupation of war. I was the commandant of the fort. It is a little insignificant petta, defended simply by a couple of gabions, a very ordinary counter-scarp, and a bomb-proof embrasure. On the top of this my flag was planted, and the small garrison of 40 men only were comfortably barracked off in the casemates within. A surgeon and two chaplains there were besides three reverend gentlemen of amateur missions, who lived in the town. Completed, as I may say, the garrison of our little fortalice, which I was left to defend and to command. On the night of the 1st of November, in the year 1804, I had invited Mrs. Major General Bulcher and her daughters, Mrs. Van de Goblishoy, and, indeed, all the ladies in the cantonment, to a little festival in honor of the recovery of my health, of the commencement of the shooting season, and indeed as a farewell visit, for it was my intention to take dock the very next morning and return to my regiment. The three amateur missionaries whom I have mentioned, and some ladies in the cantonment of very rigid religious principles, refused to appear at my little party. They had better never have been born than have done as they did. As you shall hear. We had been dancing merrily all night, and the supper, chiefly of the delicate condor, the luscious adjutant, and other birds of a similar kind, which I had shot in the course of the day, had been duly feted by every lady and gentleman present, when I took an opportunity to retire on the ramparts with the interesting and lovely Belinda Bulcher. I was occupied, as the French say, in conferring fleurettes to this sweet young creature, when, all of a sudden, a rocket was seen whizzing through the air, and a strong light was visible in the valley below the little fort. What, fireworks? Captain Gahagan, said Belinda, this is too gallant. apostrophe apostrophe indeed, my dear Miss Bulcher, apostrophe said I, they are fireworks of which I have no idea. Perhaps our friends the missionaries apostrophe, look, look, apostrophe apostrophe said Belinda, trembling, and clutching tightly hold of my arm. What do I see? Yes, no, yes. It is our bungalow is in flames. Apostrophe apostrophe, it was true, the spacious bungalow occupied by Mrs. Major General was at that moment seen a prey to the devouring element. Another and another succeeded at seven bungalows, before I could almost ejaculate the name of Jack Robinson, were seen blazing brightly in the black midnight air. I seized my night glass, and looking towards the spot where the conflagration raged, what was my astonishment to see thousands of black forms dancing round the fires, whilst by their lights I could observe columns after columns of Indian horse, arriving, and taking up their ground in the very middle of the open square tank, round which the bungalows were built. Ho, warder! Apostrophe apostrophe shouted I, while the frightened and trembling Belinda clung closer to my side, and pressed the stalwart arm that encircled her waist, down with the drawbridge. See that your masseljees, small tumbrils which are used in place of large artillery, be well loaded. You, sepoys, hasten and man the ravelin. You, chaprassies, put out the lights in the embrasures. We shall have warm work of it tonight, or my name is not Goliath Gahagan. Apostrophe apostrophe, the ladies, the guests, to the number of 83, the sepoys, chaprassies, masseljees, and so on, had all crowded on the platform at the sound of my shouting, and dreadful was the consternation, shrill the screaming, occasioned by my words. The men stood irresolute and mute with terror, the women, trembling, knew scarcely whither to fly for refuge. Who are yonder ruffians? Apostrophe apostrophe said one. 100 voices yelped in reply. Some said the Pindaris, some said the Marathas, some vowed it was Sindhia, and others declared it was Holkar. No one knew. Is there anyone here, apostrophe said I, who will venture to reconnoiter yonder troops? Apostrophe apostrophe there was a dead pause. 1,000 tomans to the man who will bring me news of yonder army. Apostrophe apostrophe again I repeated. Still a dead silence. The fact was that Sindhia and Holkar both were so notorious for their cruelty, that no one dared venture to face the danger. Oh, for 50 of my brave Abmadnugaris! Apostrophe apostrophe thought I, gentlemen, apostrophe said I see it, you are cowards, none of you dare encounter the chance even of death. It is an encouraging prospect. Know you not that the ruffian Holkar, if it be he, will with the morrow's dawn beleaguer our little fort, and throw thousands of men against our walls? Know you not that, if we are taken, there is no quarter, no hope, death for us, and worse than death for these lovely ones assembled here? Apostrophe apostrophe here the ladies shrieked, and raised a howl as I have heard the jackals on a summer's evening. Belinda, my dear Belinda, flung both her arms round me, and sobbed on my shoulder or in my waistcoat pocket rather, for the little witch could reach no higher. Captain Gahagan, apostrophe sobbed she, go go goggle-eye, apostrophe, my soul's adored. Apostrophe apostrophe replied I, swear to me one thing. Apostrophe apostrophe, I swear. Apostrophe apostrophe, that if the nasty, horrid, odious black Mariahattas take the fort, you will put me out of their power. Apostrophe apostrophe, I clasped the dear girl to my heart, and swore upon my sword that, rather than she should incur the risk of dishonors, she should perish by my own hand. This comforted her, and her mother, Mrs. Major General Bulcher, and her elder sister, who had not until now known a word of our attachment, indeed. But for these extraordinary circumstances, it is probable that we ourselves should never have discovered it. Were under these painful circumstances made aware of my beloved Belinda's partiality for me. Having communicated thus her wish of self-destruction, I thought her example a touching and excellent one, and proposed to all the ladies that they should follow it, and that at the entry of the enemy into the fort, and at a signal given by me, they should one and all make away with themselves. fancy my disgust when, after making this proposition, not one of the ladies chose to accede to it, and received it with the same chilling denial that my former proposal to the garrison had met with. In the midst of this hurry and confusion, as if purposely to add to it, a trumpet was heard at the gate of the fort, and one of the sentinels came running to me, saying that a Maratha soldier was before the gate with a flag of truce. I went down, rightly conjecturing, as it turned out, that the party, whoever they might be, had no artillery, and received at the point of my sword a scroll, of which the following is a translation. Tigalayagahagangachputi. Lord of Elephants, sir, I have the honor to inform you that I arrived before this place at 8 o'clock p.m. with 10,000 cavalry under my orders. I have burned, since my arrival, 17 bungalows in Farukabad and Fatehgarh, and have likewise been under the painful necessity of putting to death 3 clergymen, Malas, and 7 English officers, whom I found in the village. The women have been transferred to safekeeping in the harems of my officers and myself. As I know your courage and talents, I shall be very happy if you will surrender the fortress and take service as a Major General Hukabader in my army. Should my proposal not meet with your assent, I beg leave to state that tomorrow I shall storm the fort, and on taking it, shall put to death every male in the garrison, and every female above 20 years of age. For yourself I shall reserve a punishment, which for novelty and exquisite torture has, I flatter myself, hardly ever been exceeded. Awaiting the favor of a reply, I am, sir, your very obedient servant, Jeswant Rao Holkar. Camp before Fatehgarh, September 1, 1804. R.S. 5. P. Apostrophe, the officer who had brought this precious epistle. It is astonishing how Holkar had aped the forms of English correspondence, an enormous Python soldier, with a shirt of mail, and a steel cap and cape, round which his turban wound, was leaning against the gate on Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.